Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin, you're listening to Up North News.
This is number one champion sound, yeah, Estelle.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Monday, August 22nd. I'm Pat Kreitlow, he's Luke Mathers, and that's Kanye and Estelle you hear in the background. And the reason for that is, as I was discussing in the last hour, our trip to the outlet mall over the weekend, it reminded me of the reason there's a Kanye West song on my phone. Because if we've established nothing in our 3 weeks together, is that there's very little from what you and I would call the 21st century on my playlist. And sometimes the only time I hear something of this age is by accident and realize I like it. And in that particular song, American Boy, which was 2005, but I don't think I heard it until about 2015, when I was in a mall, not Hollister or something like, but it was, the Saks off Fifth Avenue, because it was at the outlet mall. And I hear the song and I'm like, that's kind of, as Dick Clark would say, it's got a good beat. I can dance to it. And I had to look it up. And at that point, again, did I know who Kanye West was at the time? No. When I see him nightly, when I turn my brain off by watching TMZ, do I think he and I would be buddies? No. But it's a good beat. You can dance to it. So that was the other reason I go to the outlet mall at least once a year, whether I need it or not, is that I can go into one of these trendy stores and listen for my next batch of new music. I'm sad to say I came away with nothing this year, so there will be no music from 2022 on my phone, at least as far as I can tell. Luke, feel free to correct me if there's been if a song has come out this year that Grandpa would like, you feel free to play it for me and let me know.
I'll take that challenge on. I'll see.
I can tell by the way your eyes are glancing at the heavens, you're not confident in this. You don't think you can find a 2022 song that Grandpa's going to like. So consider that you don't have to answer right away, but you see what you come up with, and I will keep an open mind. I promise you.
And the listeners out there, if you have a submission, what's that email again that we can have submissions?
radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. I have a unique photo that was taken yesterday at Target Field, where, again, because it was our Twin Cities weekend, I took in a Twins game going against Texas Rangers, which was all fine. But my wife took the picture of what passes for picture in a picture for me, because while the other maybe 20,000 people in the stands were watching and paying close attention to the Twins getting blown out by the Texas Rangers, we were in the second deck in row one, so I could use the little railing and hold my phone up or prop my phone up against it. And so there I am watching MLB game day, which of course, as you know, is the simulated game. It's just little computer stick men, you know, on base or getting the pitches. But that's how I was watching the Brewers game. And I don't even know why I was, because it was so, so frustrating having them lose to the Cubs on Friday and Saturday. What message did you send me after the Saturday loss, Luke?
Something along the lines of it may be time to start hitting the panic button.
I believe, it was panic mode, question mark. The answer is yes at that point. Definitely panic mode. And I'm not even quite sure why I started to follow the Brewers game. I should have just enjoyed the baseball out in the fresh air in front of me. But I thought that this just can't happen again. And thankfully it didn't, but holy cow, was it close. In the seventh inning, you had Andrew McCutchen starting off with a single. And we're thinking, okay, here we are. We got a chance to, you know, tie this or go ahead. Hunter Renfro grounds out. And then McCutchen is caught stealing with Rowdy Tellez at the plate. And the very next pitch, Rowdy Tellez hits a home run. But instead of a two-run homer, it's a solo shot. And we thought, okay, well, it could have been 2-2. Now it's 2-1. But thankfully, Keston Hira was the very next batter, and he hit his 11th homer of the season. So back-to-back home runs got it to two apiece, thankfully. And then the Brewers were able to go from there. Let's see, we had in the eighth inning, Colton Wong with a single. Kristen Yelich gets a walk when he's pinch hitting. There was a wild pitch that let Wong get to third. Willie Adames hits a sac fly. And, you know, next thing you know, the Brewers have pulled ahead and eventually win 5-2, which is all okay. But again, you dropped 2 of 3 to the Cubs, and now you're in LA to play the Dodgers for 3. And then you've got another weekend series against the Cubs, this one at Wrigley. So at LA, at Wrigley, it's going to be one challenging week. I believe I've said this before, but I think, Luke, I think this is it. I think the whole season is on the line for this week.
This weekend was tough. And Brian is a Cubs fan, so it's even harder when the other person I'm texting about these games is cheering on the demise of the Brewers. We kind of wrapped up the whole weekend after yesterday's game, going back and forth. And he goes, yeah, we could have got the sweep, but I really, really can't take it if they go on a 15-game run. This is the Cubs. And then they missed the wild card by one game. So Brian's also feeling the despair as a Cubbies fan right now. And we'll see what happens with the rest of this series.
Or this baseball season. Will break your heart. Coming up next, what did Ron Johnson say this time? Evergreen tweet. What did Ron Johnson say this time? Parts 1, 2, and 3 from the weekend when we come back here up north. Welcome back. This is Up North News. It's Monday, August 22nd. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We, in our last hour, discussed comments made by Senator Ron Johnson, and you would think that would be it, but there, again, is this evergreen placeholder that says, what did Ron Johnson say this time? And as we were getting set for looking back at this weekend's headlines, we found one example that we talked about in the last hour where he said that his involvement in January 6th was only a few seconds, and he never really answered the question about what he thought of the fraudulent electoral vote ballots. So, you know, a few seconds still matters in the context of, you know, what all transpired on January 6th and what all did the plot entail. But Johnson wasn't done with that yet. He also made comments, and I believe this was also on Upfront, Luke, as well, where the question came up about how he would treat same-sex marriage and whether he would support the bill, because he has spoken in the past that he would be leaning toward supporting something Senator Tammy Baldwin has worked on, which is codifying same-sex marriage into law.
And something that the senator has pointed out, though, since he started walking back his initial comments, was he never said he supported it. He just said he saw no reason to oppose it. That was what his initial comments were. And now we have seen a little bit of walk back and some sound.
Oh, it's not just walking back. I mean, he's going backwards to the point where it might look like he's, you know, taking a knee and genuflecting, because he's working on what he says is an amendment to protect religious freedom. He says, before I would ever support that again, a bill to codify same-sex marriage, it's completely unnecessary. Let's listen to him talk about it.
To decide that on a state-by-state basis.
Senator Baldwin has been working to codify same-sex marriage after the Supreme Court ruling on Roe. I know she's had some discussion with you. She told us they're working on an amendment in terms of concerns over religious freedom. Where are you on this?
That is the concern right there. Yeah. It's a very legitimate concern.
Does the amendment fix that? Or
I've got to see their amendment. We're working on an amendment as well. So, you know, before I'd ever support that, again, it's completely unnecessary. You have to understand this. I mean, that bill is completely unnecessary. The decision on gay marriage will never be overturned. It's completely different than Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision. Now, this is where stare decisis would be decisive. I do not see the Supreme Court overturning that, because that would impact, you know, millions of people that have been, you know, acted on that. Roe v. Wade and the Dobbs decision was proactive. It was protecting life in the future. So again, this is just Democrats you know, opening up a wound that had really healed. You know, I've always been supportive of civil unions, but the Supreme Court, you know, ruled on gay marriage, and it's okay, that's a decision, let's move on.
As we look at
I'm sorry, that's laughable. I can prove it because I just laughed. That genuinely made me laugh to hear him say, well, this has already been decided. It's stare decisis. Stare decisis. You know, the court has made its case that nothing can happen as a result of this. He actually said that. That was this weekend, long after, weeks and weeks after, this particular Supreme Court overturned a right women have had for half a century. And for him to then say, quote, the decision on gay marriage will never be overturned, is it's funny, but it's so not funny that he might actually believe that.
I don't know if I'm at this point now where I don't know if the senator says things that he actually truly believes, or he just says the things that he thinks are going to get him through the media cycle, like a lot of other national Republicans at this point, because in the face of the Dobbs decision, where Clarence Thomas clearly outlined this strategy for judicial activists in the right wing to go after other stare decisis decisions, is interesting for him to just be like, yeah, it's settled. We got to get over it, move on. And just imagine having somebody talk about your, not even just somebody, imagine having a U.S. senator talk about your rights that way. It's just, don't. Those concerns aren't valid. Just forget about it and move on.
It is just. And then I hope some of you caught in his comment the way that he basically threw women under the bus, in that he said, well, you know, this will never happen because, you know, overturning gay marriage would affect, you know, millions of people. I don't know. I think there's millions of women out there that would feel like they have been affected by the Dobbs decision. But Johnson seems to think that that's not important, what has happened to women. And again, we'll say with a straight face that, yeah, gay marriage would never be overturned, despite at least one U.S. Supreme Court justice already on record saying, let's get rid of that and a whole bunch of other things where, you know, due process was the basis and they no longer believe that it applies. So those are parts one and two of what did Ron Johnson say this time? Part one was that his involvement in January 6th only lasted a few seconds. And part two, his comments on same-sex marriage. Now we get to part three. And apparently it happened in the middle of last week, but you know, there aren't TV cameras following Ron Johnson everywhere. So sometimes these things come out, you know, a few days later. So weeks after saying on camera, or on a podcast rather, that Social Security and Medicare should come up every year for a vote. They should be in annual budget talks. He got a lot of blowback from that, but has decided to go a step further. He was in Rice Lake last Wednesday, it seems, and Ron Johnson said that Social Security, quote, was set up improperly, end of quote, and that the system's funds would be better off invested, and I'm not making this up, in the stock market. It seems to me that when Social Security was set up in 1935, there was something going on. I might have to consult a history textbook, but I believe we were in the middle of something called the Depression that came about in large part because of a crash of the stock market, and that as a result we had an elderly population that had worked all their life and had nothing to show for it, and so an old age pension plan, now known as Social Security, was created in the Depression, set up as a pay-as-you-go program, financed through a payroll tax paid by both the workers and their employers. And then that trust fund is invested in U.S. Treasury securities, which are just a little bit more secure than the stock market. But Johnson says, quote, What I want to do is I want to actually look at the problem and try and start fixing it, said Johnson, according to a recording obtained by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was responding to a series of questions from those in the meet and greet session. Johnson goes on, the first component of the problem and the first component of the solution is economic growth, which right now we're having negative growth, but right now it's all because of mandatory spending. We're whistling past the graveyard. Nobody's looking out for this. Medicare runs out, and then the Social Security Trust Fund runs out. No, as we explained on the show last week, it doesn't run out. It is a pay-as-you-go system, and as the baby boomers, you know, continue to retire and draw on those accounts, and there are fewer workers per retiree, the trust fund balance does come down. And there could be a point at which, instead of getting 100% of the Social Security benefits you were expecting, you may get less than 100%, 90, 80, perhaps as low as 76% of the benefit, but it's not zero. There would still be income coming to workers in their elderly years because of something that they paid into and was protected by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, not the whims of Wall Street. So we need to, again, correct the record whenever Ron Johnson and others bring it up that there's not an instance where the trust fund is running out. Second, you could improve the situation of the trust fund in several ways, and you could improve it today, and you could improve it quickly. One of them would be removing or altering the cap on how much of your wages are subject to a payroll deduction. If you're making, what did we say the current number is last week, 147,000, I want to say?
I believe it's right around there.
Right now. If you make anything under that, which is many of you, if not most of you, all of your pay is subject to the Social Security payroll deduction. But if you make more than that, if you make $200,000 a year, $2 million a year, if you make something like $80 million a year, in the example we gave of Diane Hendricks, the Wisconsin billionaire who benefited from one of Ron Johnson's sweetheart tax deals, you pay a Social Security payroll tax on that first $147,000 or so, and then all of the rest of your income that year has no deduction on it for Social Security, none at all. Now, you can either make the case that all income should be subject to it because we all benefit from a healthy Social Security system, or you can just raise the cap and say, okay, let's take it to 200,000 or whatever the case may be. Or you could even index it the way that, you know, the income tax system used to be better indexed, that it's, you know, so much on your first $147,000 in salary. And then for the next segment of your higher salary, maybe you tax it even higher. Again, not all of your pay, but just that part that's in the stratosphere. Any of those things could help moving the cap. The second thing would be to simply have a tax system that is more fair. And as a result, government would be in a better position to ensure that the trust fund doesn't run out. Now, Johnson knows that he has been taking hits because of his comments about Social Security and Medicare. And he has said, quote, again, I never said I wanted to cut it or end it or put it on the chopping block, but you'll see ads saying that I want to put it on the chopping block. I want to cut it. I want to end it. No, I want to save it. I want to save Medicare. I want to save Social Security. Again, if I could, I would recue the laugh, the genuine laugh that I gave you over his earlier comments about gay marriage, because again, these comments are laughable. When you say you want Social Security and Medicare to come up for a vote in Congress every year as discretionary spending, that is the literal definition of putting it on the chopping block. And if that's where you want it, again, somebody who has been so quick to talk up the benefits of the private sector, leave us to the whims of Wall Street to determine whether Social Security and Medicare are properly invested and healthy or not. I mean, as that shameless apologist for privatizing such matters, you literally are, your actions speak louder than your words, but your earlier words speak louder than the words you're trying to use right now to backtrack. Let's take a break. We'll be back. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
We'll get into why we have Tammy Wynette's Stand By Your Man playing for the most powerful Republican in Wisconsin coming up in just a bit. First, welcome back. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow along with Luke Mathers. And we have another nice summery day across Wisconsin. A very slight chance for rain and showers further north, northwest you are, as a cold front very slowly works its way across again. And so depending on, you know, from west to east, early Wednesday into early Thursday, an increasing chance for some passing rain. And then it's supposed to be a little nice on the backside of that, apparently. So we have a nice way of heading into the last full week of August for the summer of 2022. There was, but I don't want to forget to tell people, I mentioned how to listen live. Especially if you're listening on WXCO in Wausau, our flagship station, and you have to be away from the radio, but you don't want to miss a moment of, I mean, imagine if you'd only heard part one of what did Ron Johnson say this time, and you would have missed part two and three. You want to be in the loop on these things. So if you want to catch WXCO and our show, the way to do it now is with the TuneIn app or tunein.com, T-U-N-E-I-N. And on there, you just have to look up WXCO. Or if you have Alexa or one of those smart speakers, and if you tell it to play WXCO, it will bring up the signal. And have you tried this already, Luke? I did hear Crudy one day, you know, shouting at the speaker, and it appeared to work. And like I said, I don't have a smart speaker here. So what's your verdict on this?
Yeah, it works. It works wonderful. So you just say, play WXCO on TuneIn, and Alexa does her thing, and she gets the stream playing loud and clear through the smart devices. I got to find out if we can do it on Google devices as well, because there's Alexa isn't the only smart device in the game anymore. Right. So we're definitely working it out. Civic Media is doing pretty expansive rollout of all these new stations. So these are all the things that we're trying to get going at the same time. And Alexa is the first one for TuneIn.
It's a very quiet construction project going on for the listeners, but we are building a media empire, the likes of which has not been seen, at least not on anything but the far right side of the media ecosystem. But that you know, empires take time to build. And so pardon the sawdust in the background, but this is exactly what we're working on here. In the meantime, with WXCO as our flagship, do feel free to tune in that way. And we appreciate it. Of course, WXCO is known up here as Bull Falls Radio. And so if you look up Bull Falls Radio on Facebook or Twitter, you'll get to see us doing this fine radio program as well, and we appreciate it. The Washington Post continues to notice Wisconsin politics. I mean, it was anyway, but then they recently picked up Patrick Marley, who had been at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel forever, and I think the Post very rightfully brought Patrick on board their team so that readers across the nation can find out what is happening in this crucial situation. It's like crucial Waukesha County. It's now crucial Wisconsin. This is a very key place in that petri dish of democracy that we're trying to grow here. And yet at sometimes it seems like we're trying to poison it. So Patrick Marley writes in this morning's Washington Post, over the past 15 months, the Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly has sought to placate Donald Trump as the former president bombarded him with phone calls about the 2020 election, accused him of covering up corruption, labeled him a Republican in name only, and endorsed his little-known primary opponent. After winning his primary by just 260 votes this month, Robin Voss expressed no regrets and continues to stand by Trump. Quote, I think Donald Trump has done a lot of good things for our country, and if he runs again, he could do a lot more, Foss said in an interview in his state capitol office. But I'm not going to say that just because Donald Trump believes something that I'm going to change what I believe, unless I'm persuaded. Those three words kill me. I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm going to stand up to Donald Trump unless I'm persuaded. So Mr. Marley goes on and describes how Republicans have fallen into two different camps here, the ones that embrace his lies about losing and those who resist any efforts to try to reverse the results. Again, something that's not a thing. Voss has been trying to forge a middle ground. He launched that expensive review, quote unquote, of the 2020 election led by former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. But he has also refused to take the legally impossible step of decertifying the election, Marley writes. And yet his efforts have not been enough to escape Trump's revenge. I do want to note that in terms of the Gableman investigation that Voss finally pulled the plug on a week ago, Democratic State Senator Melissa Agard says she has heard crickets, in her words, from Republicans about Democrats requesting that Gableman's office receive an audit. She's on the Joint Audit Committee, and she said, "We need to provide some guardrails," she's quoted in WisPolitics. It was clear that he, Gableman, was inept, and this money was not being spent in the best interest of the state of Wisconsin. But how is it that we as a state spend these dollars looking backwards, looking forward? We need to make sure things like this don't ever happen again. And again, it's been noted that the Gableman investigation has cost you and me and all of Wisconsin more than $1 million. $1 million just down a rat hole. And so the Democratic members of the audit committee would like to have something happen to find that accountability. How did Gableman spend the money? Where did he get it? And right now, Republicans are saying, nope, don't think that's going to happen. Voss goes on in the Patrick Marley article in the Washington Post, "I have never undercut or said that Donald Trump did something in the White House or in policy in general that I didn't agree with." He says, "I just don't think we can do something that's unconstitutional." Voss declined to say whether he believes Trump should announce another run for office, even before this year's midterms, or whether Trump could be a drag on Republicans this fall. Spoiler alert, he is. But Voss did express concern about the future of the party if it remains under the sway of one person. Voss says, quote, "The Republican Party of today has somehow got this idea that if you don't agree all the time on every topic with exactly what someone else thinks should be the ideology of the party, you're not worthy of support. And I think that is a dying vision for a political party." And yet he just won't take that next step and say Trump's name about it. He'll just say, "Well, we feel like somebody feel like you should, you know, agree with somebody else." Don't say somebody else. Say Trump. Right now, the Trump-supporting Republicans in the legislature have not been able to get away with the outright attacks on American democracy that you're seeing in other states that have Republican-controlled legislatures. That's because you have a Democratic governor here in Tony Evers. But as Patrick Marley notes, that could change if Trump-endorsed construction executive Tim Michaels, R-Connecticut, wins in his race against him. Because if Michaels wins, and if Republicans, as expected, hold on to the legislature because of ridiculously gerrymandered maps, there would definitely be moves to restructure how elections are run. And there's no middle ground there. There's not going to be mild tinkering with election rules. Who thinks Donald Trump would allow that? He's going to want all or nothing. And it's just not clear yet if there's any way that, you know, Voss could work well with Michaels, given that Voss endorsed Rebecca Clefish against Michaels in the gubernatorial primary. And Michaels has suggested in the past that Voss has not earned a, quote, passing grade and might not be, quote, reformable as a legislative leader. And I had to pause when I read that the first time. So I'm going to say it again. Tim Michaels saying that Robin Voss might not be reformable as a legislative leader. I mean, we make dear leader jokes about Donald Trump all the time, but now we're talking about whether politicians, whether elected officials can be reformed into doing whatever Donald Trump wants them to do. Michaels has said that he would dissolve the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission. He has said he would replace it with a new agency, but he hasn't spelled out any of the details. And some of the things that he suggested earlier in the year are things that would actually make election administration weaker than what is currently done. But we weren't expecting Tim Michaels to actually know how elections work. I mean, heck, even Michael Gableman said at the start of his investigation, he doesn't know how elections work. They're not interested in the details. They're not interested in the policy. They're interested in the outcome. And if the outcome is that Trump lost, then you tinker with the system to make it so that he wins, even if he doesn't get the most number of votes. We've had State Representative Evan Goyke of Milwaukee, a Democrat, on the show in the past, and he is quoted in the Patrick Marley article in the Washington Post saying that it was stunning to see Trump and his allies paint Voss, the longest serving assembly speaker in Wisconsin history, as anything other than conservative, given the way that Voss has slashed taxes, curbed the power of unions, limited early voting in Wisconsin, and put in place those gerrymandered maps that have locked in Republican majorities, which will now be for two decades. Goyke said, there's the Donald Trump party and there's the Republican party. They're drifting further and further apart. I think the takeaway might be that there is a purity test now in the Trump party that Voss couldn't pass. And that is going to leave Voss with a weaker position in his caucus. So again, whether it's Evers reelected or Michaels elected as governor, it is a fair question as to whether Robin Voss really does have the support to be the assembly Republican leader and speaker next year.
And kind of in this same vein, Pat, I don't know if you've seen this or not yet, but Molly Beck over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is letting us know that Michael Gableman's bounced back already. He's already got a new job and title. Molly Beck tweeting out this morning, Michael Gableman was introduced at the Pillow executive Mike Lindell's Moment of Truth conference as senior counsel at the Thomas More Society, society that he was, I believe, renting out space to and was kind of doing his efforts in coordination with over the last 14 months. But Gableman was fired last week, Friday, so almost more than a week ago now. By Assembly Speaker Robin Voss from his post leading the review of the 2020 election the conclusion of Molly Beck's tweet this morning. But I find that pretty interesting. I wanted to share with you that Michael Gableman's already bounced back from all this saga and landed on his feet with a new, what I would assume, cushy job for the Thomas More Society.
Okay, let's see. What can we learn here from the Thomas More Society, from the wizards in the tubes that make up the internet? Thomas More Society.
They're hamsters. They're wizards.
They're little tiny hamster wizards. Little tiny hats that fit through the tubes. The Thomas More Society, says here on Wikipedia, is a conservative Roman Catholic public interest law firm based in Chicago. The group has been engaged in many culture war issues, promoting its anti-abortion and anti-same-sex marriage beliefs through litigation. The society filed cases in Wisconsin and elsewhere as part of Donald Trump's failed attempt to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The society is formally recognized by the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops as a national Catholic association, meaning a type of public association of the faithful under canon law of the Catholic Church. And as for those Wisconsin suits, let's see, what can I find here? Oh, yes, they were amongst those who filed complaints before the State Elections Commission about the money that came from the Center for Tech and Civic Life. Again, the group that received money from Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg in order to help Wisconsin communities pay for fair elections, administer them properly. It is a group that has given money to hundreds of communities across Wisconsin, but they selectively only picked on the biggest five which had the most votes, to say that there must be something fishy going on. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up this hour's conversation up next. You're up north. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow along with Luke Mathers. And the continuing saga that is a Wisconsin homeowner. I'm basically just trying to do my part to educate young Mr. Mathers on what he is facing as he engages in the adulting ritual of owning property. I have to say that it did not start for us until age 30 is when we bought our first, when we bought the only house we've had here in Chippewa Falls on beautiful Lake Wissota. And we were 30 years old at the time. My wife had just turned 30. I was about to turn 31. And here we've been, you know, in the 27 years ever since. When we moved here, our daughters were ages 4 and 6. And we had lived in a couple of different apartment complexes while my wife was going through her education, training, and residency. And so when things would break at the apartment, we would, you know, have to call the rental office. And, you know, how do you talk to, you know, 4 and 6 year olds, you know, when some stranger is going to come in? You just say, well, you know, some men are going to come fix it. And we weren't trying to be sexist then. It's, but every repair tech that we had was a guy. And so they were used to, you know, men coming to fix a leaky pipe or, you know, an electrical issue or what have you. The first time that we had some kind of a problem at the house, once we had our own home and something broke, we still laugh at how the six-year-old was looking at us, you know, kind of befuddled by some problem. And she said, why don't you call the men? And we said, what do you mean? He said, the men that fix things. And we couldn't disagree. It's like, that's all she's ever seen is you call the men who come fix things. Well, now we are the men who fix things. And so we have engaged in the most recent edition of that with my apologies, this is mostly for Luke's benefit, but if you're watching the video feed, these rather discolored things are the parts of a toilet that is at least 27 years old. And this was the old, fill valve. And with the big old, you know, ball at the end of the arm that comes down, you know, it almost looks like something a circus clown would play with. I don't think toilets have come with that kind of a setup in forever.
Yeah. Were you able to find the replacement parts? Because those look a little outdated.
We're looking at all of the fill valves, we're understanding, you know, none of them have these great big, you know, things that look like an inflatable ball at the end of a long rod. It's much more a one self-contained apparatus now. So we picked one up and so began Pat and Sherry's effort at replacing a fill valve. And I say effort just to give away the end of the story, that the toilet is still not in use after too much time that was invested in it last night. Time when I could have been booking an interesting guest so that you wouldn't have to listen to me prattle on. But, you know, as I mentioned last week, having a home means spending 8 to 12 hours doing something that a repair person could get done in 30 minutes at what could be extraordinary expense, but what's your time worth? Our time was worth enough to give this a shot ourselves. And by and large, we were fairly successful. Again, fairly means you still can't use the toilet. So that's kind of like almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades.
I'm just picturing you having to get to the point where you bring the hose in from outside and you use that to fill the tank.
No, we didn't.
Fill valve's not working.
We didn't. We did that. And by we, I mean me. My job was to go to lay down on the floor, get underneath the toilet in order to get, you know, the lock nut and the other, the doohickey thing, get that unscrewed from the bottom of the toilet and remove the old hose and all of the, shall we say, the mess that came along with it. And, you know, again, I want to say this is to fill the toilet tank. So we're not talking any kind of organic material. It's just that over years, you know, of plumbing, it's not, you know, the cleanest of jobs that you're going to do. Anyway, we get it all done, and yet we're finding that the fill valve attaches to the flush valve. And where it's attached to the flush valve, this is where you would, when you push the handle down, the valve lifts up and lets all the water in the tank out, but it's letting the flush valve go up too high, and then it's not coming back down so that the tank will refill. And so that was the thing. We've got it all in. It's installed just fine, but we can't figure out the attachment to the flush valve, which, Luke, I think you figured out what this means, is our next thing is to replace the flush valve, because it's clearly the new fill valve is not attaching to the old flush valve.
The 27-year-old flush valve.
Yes, exactly. So at what point does this then become replacing the toilet itself? I mean, we've come this far, right? Would it have been easier? I don't know. But at some point, Pat and Sherry are going to go get themselves a new flush valve and continue this exercise in marital bonding, this team building exercise that we call home ownership, the plumber's edition. And yet somehow we managed to do this. Luke, I am hoping, guessing, praying that you have a deeper skill set than mine when it comes to these matters.
To plumbing? I don't know, but I was up on the roof. I had to clean out some gutters because I noticed some of the buildup with the rain this weekend. So I was like, all right, I got to get back up there. So I was cleaning out some gutters. And then we've had some road construction done in our neighborhood. So we've got a brand new like front of the driveway where it connects to the road. But now that makes the rest of my driveway look pretty bad, and there were some weeds and stuff growing in some of the cracks, so I got out the weed whacker and the power washer, and I was doing some upkeep of the driveway and the path up to the house, so those all look nicer. And then I accidentally sprayed the garage door as well with the power washer, so then rather than just leave one really clean spot, I power washed the entire
garage
door.
Right?
Yep. So I started that project and then saw it through to the end. But that was pretty much what I... No plumbing this weekend. More outdoor, making sure that everything works in the gutters and making the driveway look pretty.
I'm telling you, mentioned gutters, and I'm almost having PTSD because we had some of the worst luck with our back gutter in a couple of different, either late fall, early winter, where you'd have it freeze, and then you'd have like this heat, not heat wave, but then everything would melt, then rain again, and you'd have to go clean out the gutters, but you couldn't because they were pretty much all ice or very wet ice. And there's many different ways where gutters can go wrong. We finally put some kind of a gutter helmet type thing on there, and I think the problem has resolved itself, or we just can't see inside the gutter and see what all is happening there. So there could be bigger problems to talk about, making this toilet one look rather, you know, flushable by comparison. We'll do one more hour of this, hopefully get back into some of what's happening in the news rather than what's happening in, you know, us running headlong into going back to calling the men who fix things. We'll be back. You're up north.